Now we're holding Anchof Zayin, Omid Beis, the second line from the bottom. We started learning yesterday about Dugal Shigur. The Mishnah had told us that you have the case of we said even though normally you don't swear on cases involving karka, but where there's a case of karka plus metaltlin, since you have to swear on the metaltlin, then you swear on the karka as well. So that's the concept of Dugal Shigur. The claim about karka itself wouldn't have been strong enough to require a shigur by itself, but once you're already including with another shigur, then you can do that. So we said we learned that from the soita, where the husband, when the kohen beswears her, etc., where primarily it's talking about what happened during the time when she was in the sewer, which is when he did the kinui, but it also includes back when she was in Arusa, even though back then a kinui or stira wouldn't have had the same effects to have her drink the soita water. So the Gemara says, Ashkan soita di isura. Okay, well that tells us an example where we have a matter of isur beheter. Then we see you have Dugal Shigur. Mamoina menolon, where do we see the same thing applies to matters of mamon as well? The soita doesn't, elsewhere, the Gemara does say that the soita does include mamon as well, because after all, it causes her to lose uksuba, but primarily it's a matter of isur. So therefore, how do we know where it's exclusively mamon? So tonet ve'rabi shmal kavachoyim. So we have a kavachoyim. Ma soita shalomitna li tova ve'edachod. Madach the soita, you can't make her take the shirua on the basis of one aid, because you need two aidim to see that there was the stira. At the beginning of Sota, it talks about, you have the different opinions, whether you need two aidim for stira, whether you need two aidim for kinui, etc., but you definitely need two aidim at some point in the process, because ein davish ever pachas mishnayim, and yet megalgalin, and yet we can do a gilgal shavua. So then, moment shenitimli tova ba'edachad, when it comes to matters of moment where you could claim a valid claim in based in and make the other guy swear on the basis of one aid. You have three cases al pitora where a person has to swear. Modiv mitzas is one. A shomer is the second one, and the third one is where there's one aid against him. So you have a case where moment can be claimed, and the result is a shvua based on one aid. Ein adin shemagalglin, wouldn't it be then a kavachomer that you could do gilgul shvua as well? That once you're making him swear on one thing, then you can make him swear on other claims, which by themselves wouldn't be enough to trigger a shvua. Okay, so the Gemara says ashkechan bevadai. Fine. So that covers the case where that covers the case where there's a vadei claim, because what's the case where you're claiming against somebody with one aid is where there's a tainus vadei. You owe me $100, and the other one says no, and there's one aid backing up the one who says you owe me. Suffolk menolon, where do we see that the same thing would apply when there's a suffolk? Now you have a number of cases where you beswear a person based on a suffolk. For example, Rashi says, let's say you have what's called shvuas ashutfin v'harisin. So you have two people had a partnership. Later on, they decided to dissolve the partnership, and each one will take his part. Each one of them is going to think to himself, you know what? Maybe during the time of the partnership, my partner may have taken something from it that he's not supposed to. That's not a strong enough basis to make him swear in the first place. However, if he's already required a shvur from something else, then we gaugle and all of us are curled, and we can include everything else as well. So we see that even though it's not a tainus vada, it's only a tainus suffix, you can still bring that in. Now, Rashi also adds, well, why don't we answer from the soita herself? Because after all, the soita herself is all a tainus suffix. And the difference is that's because there you couldn't have the kavachomer. The shvur, the soita, the whole thing is based on a suffix to begin with. But with Mammon, in order to make the other guy swear, you need to start with a Tainas Vada. You need to start with, for example, I lent you this money, where is it? Or why haven't you paid me back? Or I gave you this Pikadon, where is it? Etc. Which, by the way, before I should point out, that you do actually have, to a certain extent, you have suffered there as well, because in the case of Shavuos HaShomim, one of the three cases where you swear somebody Midaraisa is by a Shomer, and by a Shomer, the taina that you're making is something of a suffix. You're saying that you're saying I gave you this thing as a pekodin, fine, that part is a vadai, but I'm claiming that you haven't given it back to me. I'm claiming that that you were pesheya or you were whatever, and the other guy is swearing back. He doesn't know for sure that the other guy did that. It's only a suffix whether he did that. But still, at least it starts out with a tainas vadai. So where do we know, for example, let's say something about this shavuos hashutfin or whatever, where the whole thing, you know, the whole shavua is basically a suffix. Where he's saying that I'm suspecting that during the time of the partnership you took something you weren't supposed to, so I want to beswear you on that. So how do we know that such a thing you can include in Gilgal Shavua as well? So the Gemara answers, we're not going to learn from, you're right, we can't learn that from a Kavah Chomer, but we can use that from a different, we can learn from a different way. Tanya Rav Shimon Yochayim Nemar Shavua Bachutz VeNemar Shavua Bifnim. You have, the Torah tells us about a shavua that takes place in the Bis Mikdash, namely the Sota, because that takes place in the Azara. We also have where the Torah tells us about a shavua that takes place outside the Bis Mikdash, namely the shavuos that take place in Beis Din. The point is, we're not going to learn, the point is that we're learning from a mamotzinu. We're doing a binyan av. Once we have one kind of shavua, then we're applying what happens to then what we're applying what happens with it, where it's all based on suffix. We're applying it to the other kind of shavua as well. Ma shavua hamur b'fnim osa b'suffik kibadai, just like the one inside the smikdash, the one of the sota. The suffix is as strong as vadai, and you can beswear her. That once you have the taina that you were alone with this guy and I want to beswear you that you weren't tummy, then you can include in it the other kinds of things as well. For example, if there wasn't somebody else involved, so it is also the shavuos outside the Bis Mikdash, that suffix is just like vadai, and you can include them in the Gilgal Shavua as well. Which Tosfos points out then in that case, so then why do we need the Kavah Chomer at all? We started out with the Kavah Chomer from Sota to Mon. Now that we're learning from a Mamotzinu, what do we need the Kavah Chomer for? And the answer is that we still needed the Kavah Chomer to know Bechlal that we can learn that this applies to Mammon as well. Otherwise, we would say we can't learn a matter of Mammon from a matter of Issa V'Hetter. Now that we have that, then we can use this Mamotzinu. Which Tosfos also adds the point that when we talk about that you can add a suffix with Gilgal Shavua, it still has to be, there has to be some kind of basis for the suffix. So for example, Tosfos gives an example. Let's say, Reuven is chayav to swear to Shimon. Shimon can't tell him, well, also swear to me that you never stole anything from me. There's no basis for chlal for Shimon to suspect that Reuven ever was in a position to. Where you have, for example, Shutfin or Arisin or other cases like that, they had a business partnership, then you have reason to think that maybe at some point he would murder Heter for himself and rationalize for himself and took a little something extra, then you can impose that on him. So that's how we learn the concept of Gilgal Shavua, and that it can include even a tiny suffix. So the Gemara says, Ad Heichan Gilgal Shavua. How far do we go with this concept of Gilgal Shavua? What kind of claim even can be included in it? So we just said, Joseph said, for example, there has to be some kind of basis for the claim. You can't just stand this claim out of the blue, but given when you have at least a basis for some kind of claim, no matter how weak it is, what kind of claims can be included? For example, Reuben can say to Shimon, he shavalisha in avdi avda, swear to me that you're not my Evan. So now, in other words, so, So we're going to explain soon what we mean by ad peichon. But on the face of it, it sounds like we mean that he's telling him, I claim that you're my Eved Kanani, and I claim that you're my Eved Kanani, and I want you to swear that not. The Gemara asks, in that case, if a person makes such a claim against a fellow Yid, you're an Eved Kanani, forget about Basedin telling the other guy, okay, go swear to that. And we'll clue that in your shvur that you swear into something else. We're going to put such a person in cherem who makes such a claim against a fellow Yid. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, if one Yid calls another one an Eved Kanani, that is, Yehei Nidun, he deserves to be a Nidun. Tosfos points out that what it means is, it doesn't mean he's automatically a Nidui. It means Beis Din has a responsibility of putting him in Nidui for doing such a thing. Why is it? So Rashi just says, Mizalzabi Surah Kokah. He's treating a fellow Yid so contemptuously, so therefore they treat him in a contemptuous way and put him in Cheren. Tosfos says a little bit different. It's Mida Kenegan Mida. He's calling the other guy an Eved. We have Avodim, Oru Knan, Eved Avodim, Yela Echav. Therefore, we put an Oru on him, and we put him in Nidui, where they say on him that he's Oru.
Nothing to do with the fact that Hashem says you're Avodim to me, but not Avodim to me.
No, because here this guy is claiming that you're my Eved, as in you're my Eved Knan. So if it was true, then the guy's not part of Kili Bnei Yisrael Avodim. But we're saying, how do you have the chutzpah to make such a false claim against a fellow Yid and call him an Eved? So we put him in Nidui. If he calls him Mamzer, Sofeg Asar Boim. If one Yid calls another one a Mamzer, then the one who called him that gets 40 Malkus. Rashi says Makas Maudus. Rashi also says this is a little easier on him than Nidui. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that Nidui, in some ways, is a much harsher punishment. You're completely ostracized from everybody else, as opposed to Malkus, you get fetch and it hurts, but then that's over. What the Tosfos points out, the Midah Keneged Midah, and it is, by saying he's a Mamzer, in effect, you're saying that guy was over on an Aveva. Because the Pashtus, that other guy, is married to a Bat Yisrael, and a Mamzer is not allowed to. So therefore, in effect, you're saying that his whole marriage is an Isser, he was over on a Lav, therefore we give him Malkus of 40 Malkus, as if he himself was over on a Lav.
If he's married.
Well, the Pashtus, I guess it would be if he's married, yeah. But there is a considerable amount of discussion in that case. If we're saying that Marcus Maudus is 40 Malkus, 39, whatever, and Malkus Zaraisa is also 40, so what's the difference between them? And there's a lot of different explanations. Maybe Marcus Maudus is lighter blows than the regular kind. Maybe on the contrary, maybe Marcus Maudus, there's an explanation that the Oruch gives an explanation. Marcus Maudus, there's no specific number based on can do however many they feel is necessary. In this particular case, for the reason that Tosfos is mentioning, there's a reason to say 40. But in other scenarios, it could be however much based in feels is necessary for the given situation. But
you must learn that if the ones that Madaraisi, the doctor has to figure out.
Ah, that's another point as well. Yeah, that's another explanation, actually, is that, yeah, with one's Daraisa, a doctor has to check him out in advance, see how many he can take, whereas with Marcus Maudus, not necessarily do we do that. But there is also, I think, Tosfos elsewhere says an explanation that the vote is that Marcus Maudus may actually be lighter blows than, the regular ones. Anyway. An interesting side point in this regard, by the way, is in Shulchan Aruch that it talks about the case where actually the Magen Avraham brings up a case. If one Yid calls another one a Mamzer, so he has to ask Mechila. This is in the Halachas of before Yom Kippur, ask Mechila from fellow Yid. But does he need to ask Mechila from the person's parents? On the face of it, by him saying you're a Mamzer amounts to saying that your parents were over on something. So the Maharshal says, and the Magen Avraham agrees with this, and Alter Rebbe brings it to Shulchan Aruch, no, because you can say, I didn't mean your parents, Dafka. I meant that you yourself are a Mamzerish type of person. But you call him Mamzer, Ben Mamzer, then you gotta ask Mechila from his parents as well. So getting back to the Gemara over here, so then, another one, Rosha Yored Imei L'Chayev. If one Yid calls another one a Rosha, then Yored Imei L'Chayev literally means he goes down with him to his life. Meaning, so Rashi explains over here, Beis Din's not going to get involved, but the one who was called that is allowed to hate the other one. Rashi says he's even allowed to go and interfere with the guy's parnasa and go and start a competing business with him or something. Elsewhere, though, this Gemara is also in Bav Metzia. This Gemara is also in Bav Metzia, and Rashi says it's a little hard to understand. What do you mean, Beir? What do you mean? Halacha is going to allow him to take the Kama? What happened to Lo Sikoim? So Rashi says over there, it doesn't mean that he's actually allowed to. It means, practically speaking, when one Yid calls another one a Rosha, the other one is going to, from then on, hold it against him and stir it up with him and so on and so forth. Tosfos brings an even more interesting explanation over there in Bav Metzia. Tosfos brings an explanation from Rav Tzadik Gaon that Yerudah D'Melechayev means that he's allowed to Lisrif Shlish Tvuase, he's allowed to burn one-third of the other guy's crops. And Tosfos says, where on earth did Rav Tzadik get that from? So there's the,
like with Yayav, no?
So there is a story with Yayav where Avshalom burnt his brain, and later on the Gemara says somebody who burned somebody else's brain, ain't maniach bein leyoshtoi, and in fact that happened to Avshalom, they passed away childless. But yeah, so Tosfos wonders where on earth does that come from. The Rivosh in fact says on that same Tosfos, says, come on, this is Dibrit Halomus, this is Stam, somebody columned up such an idea of one third. With that said, there are places where they find some justification for it, based on other Gemaras, based on Agadas and whatever. One thing we have is when Rabbi Eliezer was put in Nidri, it says that one third of all the crops at the time were damaged by storms and whatever because Hashem was Rabbi Eliezer was upset and Hashem stuck up for him. So there you have, in effect, by putting him in Nidri, they're calling him a Rosha, and the result was that one third of the crops were destroyed. So you see, so you have a certain basis for what Tosfos is saying. There's other explanations as well. Anyway, the point is that if a Yid comes to Beis Din and says to another one, you're an Eved, Fakir, Beis Din is not going to say, you know what, that's a serious claim, we need to see what we do about it. Fakir, we're going to put the first guy in Cherem for making such a false claim against a Yid. So what are you telling me, Ad Heichem Gilgul Shvua, that you can say you're my Eved and Beis Din is going to say, okay, once you're swearing to him about something else, then swear to that as well. By the way, Ben Yehoyada over there in Bav Metzia gives a cute word about it. He says the word Lachayav is also the same letters as Lachoyav, meaning his cheeks, as in Lachoyav Tarugas Haboisem, meaning when it talks about learning Torah, the Pasuk and Shir Hashirim, his cheeks are like beds of spices, where one meaning of that is as far as the cheeks of a person that speaks the words of Torah. So Yerudah D'Melechayev, he says over there, means like you have the right to take away his Torah from him because and then like credit it to you, saying it gets credited to you rather than to him because he used such a slur against you. Anyway, so Ella Omar Rava, so no, what Rava, so Rava says when we say he shoveli shein abdiata, what we mean is he shoveli shein entirely be evet ivri. Swear to me that you were not sold to me as an evet ivri. So that's not the kind of thing where we're going to put him in chayim for that. An evet ivri is not an evet knani, he's for to yid. So therefore, that's a valid claim, and we have to pay attention to that. Incidentally, the Ritva learns from here that you see, and that question is, Rava and Rav Yehuda, who he's explaining, lived hundreds of years after there's no more Eved Ivri, because there's now that's only Noyeg, Bizman Shah Yevel Noyeg. So what are we talking about? Halachot Mashiach over here? He says, no, even in later generations, a Yid is allowed to sell himself to another Yid as an Eved, and then to a certain extent, he'll have the dinim of an Eved Ivri. He won't be allowed to marry a Shifcha or whatever, and there won't be a matter of piercing his ear and everything that we learned earlier in the Perek, but there can be to a certain extent where he has the dinim of an Eved, the Ritva wants to say. Anyway. Okay, so the Gemara asks, "Hi, Tainam Mao, you see? Well, then, why do we need to say that this is only something that you're going to swear on because of Gilgul Shvua? That's a full-fledged claim. It's a regular claim of Mammon. Why shouldn't it require a Shvua even on its own, not just as a matter of Gilgul Shvua?" And the answer is, after all, it's a matter of Mammon. He's claiming that you sold yourself to me as an Eved for X amount of money, and I want my money, or I want your Abdus. The answer is, Rova L'Taimei. Rava is going according to his own Svara. The Amar Rava, we learned earlier, when we learned all about Avodim Ivriim earlier in the Perek, Rava had said, Eved Ivri Gufay Konri. The goof of the Eved Ivri belongs to the master. It's not just a matter of a monetary claim, it's a matter of that his actual body belongs to the Odin. So therefore, it's not a regular thing on the Talpilin. It's an Eved is compared to Karka. So therefore, and again, you don't swear by itself on things involving karka. So the Gemara asks, Yehochi Hainu Karka. Well, then that's exactly the same thing as karka that we already said in the Mishnah, that karka itself, you don't swear on individually only as Gilgul Shvua. So what is, in that case, then what does Yehuda mean when he says, Ad Heichan Yogo Shvua? You want to know how far you go is even this. This is just Karka under another name. Which, by the way, there is a good deal of discussion among Rishonim about that question. An Eved Knani, for sure, we know, is compared to Karka. Is an Eved Ivri compared to Karka from all Gemara as implying yes? What about a regular free yig? A person, for example, hires himself out to work for somebody else for a while. So there is a concept that Gemara elsewhere mentioned that renting or hiring is considered like a sale for a period of time. So does that mean that something like that would have the din of karka and therefore you don't swear on it by itself, only by Gilgul Shavua? Or maybe not, maybe by a Ben Chorin, maybe by a free yid who just rented out his time, maybe you don't say that equation with karka.
But you're only by the hour, like for 8 hours a day.
Well, I mean, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, the answer is, you might think the difference is because when it comes to karka, people often sell it in private. Now, to be sure, not always. In fact, Goes with Yunim on the side of it here mentions there's Gemara in Bava Basra that says the other way around, people usually sell karka b'fahesya. So there are various, there are a couple of acronym talk about ways of reconciling. One of them is the Gemara doesn't mean over there and over here, that's always one way. It's sometimes one and sometimes the other. As opposed to,
We learned that some places they sold karka
without a shtar, fine.
So how do you we don't make a coil?
So that may be. It might be the difference is whether they write a shtar or not. Could be. Whatever the case, there could be. But so karka sometimes is done privately, So therefore, so you would think, is the zabin less like kola? So therefore, you can argue, look, if he sells karka, there's no coil for it. 8:30. Yeah. 8:30. So you would think when it comes to karka, you could argue, this is a zabin less they call it. If he sold it, then there may not necessarily be a coil. So you could argue that's why you can't make a person swear on a case involving karka. Or the other way around, you could say when it comes to karka, it's a sworn claim. The reason why you can't make him swear is because there's a kosov that swearing at least daraisa applies only on things in metalplin. But you could argue it is a sworn claim, so he could say, you sold me this karka. There's not a coil for it. There isn't always a coil for it. But when it comes to here, when it comes to the Eved, im isa de zabin kola isle, you would think avodim are generally sold more publicly. Okay, with an Eved Ivri, you're not allowed to sell them. Rashi mentions on the Pasuk, you can't sell them out Eved Amnekah. You can't like put them on a stone like they sell Goyish slaves and then make a public auction of it. But still, there's a certain curl to it. So you would think, therefore, the other guy could say, what are you talking about? If I sold myself to you as an Eved Ivri, there should be some curl about it. Why is there not? It means you're stam hacking a chain. Kamash Malan, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, nevertheless, we still have to pay attention to that. It may be a weak taina because the other guy can say, well, where's the coil? Nevertheless, once he's swearing on something else, we make him include this as well.
If he stole by Bezin because he stole, so then Bezin is a witness.
Maybe. So, but we're talking about over here. Again, he could sell himself as an Eved. Yeah. So, okay. Mishnah says, now that we talked about
the bottom line is
there is Gilgul Shavuot when it comes to that you're my Eved, but the you're my Eved is not that you're an Eved Knani, because then you put the guy in Seirim is saying that, but rather you're my Eved, I claim that you're my Eved Ivri, that at one point you sold yourself to me as an Eved Ivri and knew where's the money or the labor. So then, by itself, that wouldn't be enough of a taina to trigger a shvua, because again, avodim are compared to karka, and you don't swear on things involving karka. However, if he's already swearing on because of something else, because of motive mitzvah, or edechad, or shvua, or any of the other shvuas that we talked about until now, daraisa or derabanan, then you can include with it this shvua as well. And by the way, it doesn't mean you don't have then separate shvuas for each one. Means you include it all in one big shvua. Basically, we'll tell him that we're going to beswear you that you don't owe this guy the $50 that he claimed, and that this, and that, and that you didn't sell yourself as an Eved. Like the almond vomit of a sartre, exactly. Okay. Now that we talked about the various kinds of kinyanim of metalplin, so now and of karka and of metalplin, so now we're going to talk about kinyan chalifin. And really there's two kinds of kinyan chalifin. You have what we usually think of as kinyan sudr. You have every year when you go in and deal with mechira chametz with the rav, the rav is giving you his garutel. And you're being koinet. You're giving your thing to him in return for his gautel. Obviously your chametz is worth a lot more than his gautel, but that's chalifin, is you can use any kind of keli. The Gemara elsewhere explains even if that keli is not worth shava pruta. Then you have another kind of kinyan chalifin, which is called shava b'shava, where you're trading two things of approximately equal value, or at least assessors may not consider they have equal value, but to you, at least, you know, you want this thing right now, and therefore you're willing to trade something else of value for it. An animal for an animal is going to be an example. Machlokes part of a chamor, that's going to be an example in our Mishnah, yeah. Yeah. Some years ago, there was something that made the news where there was this fellow who traded up, beginning from a paperclip all the way to a house. Like, he traded a paperclip to another person for a pencil, and then a pencil for something slightly more valuable, and so on and so forth, and eventually he got all the way up to a house. So that's a chain of kinyan chalifins like that, and yeah. Anyway, that's chalifin shava b'shava. Okay, so the Mishnah says, kol ha'nasa domim ba'achar, anything that is used as value against something else. Now, at this point, it sounds like we mean money, which is the standard of value that everything else is measured against. How do you measure the value of a cow or a pencil or whatever? Is it's worth X amount of dollars. So at this point, the Gemara is going to start with the assumption that the words kol ha'nasa domim ba'acher is referring to money. And we're going to see in the Gemara, actually, not necessarily, we're going to see several different ways of explaining the Mishnah. Kivin shezocha zeh, once the one person is zoche in his part, as chalifin, nischayev zeba chalifav, then the other one is now chayev to, then the other one is now nischayev in chalifav. So nischayev, meaning in other words, that now, so once, in other words, Rashi says, for example, if we're talking about money over here, we can be talking about, by assumption, we're talking about that we're using money as a method of chalifin. Now, you're paying money as the regular thing. I'm paying you X amount of dollars for this thing. But in the Talmud, we learned before, you can't be koinev kesef. You need Meshicha or something. But here we have the assumption at this point is we're talking about that we're saying I'm giving you one coin of as a down payment, and that will be like Kenyan Chalifin. That'll be like Kenyan Sudir. And then later on, I'll pay you the rest of it. So now it sounds so therefore we're saying that once the Lakea, once he takes one Zuz as Chalifin, then already the other one is Chayev in the sense that any onus that happens to it, he's still gonna have to pay the rest. Ketzad, what does this mean? Hechlif Sherbapara, for example, you traded a cow, you traded an ox for a cow, or Chamur Bashur, or you traded a donkey for an ox. Kivin Shazachazeh, once the owner of the cow gets a hold of the shur and does Mashicha on it or whatever, Nischayev zeba chalifav, then the other one becomes chayev in the exchange, meaning, in other words, that even oinsin are going to be on him rather than the other guy, because at that point, the other animal belongs to him. Again, we're going to see in the Gemara a couple of different ways of explaining that not necessarily is this what the Mishnah is talking about, is a matter of using money as chalifim. We're going to see in the Gemara a couple of different possibilities. Tosfos brings up a couple of points in this regard. One thing is, Tosfos says maybe you don't have the second zeh in the Mishnah. Maybe it's not kivin shezocha zeh, nischayev zeh b'chalifa, which means as soon as Reuven picks up one of the coins, then Shimon nischayev b'chalifa, maybe not necessarily, because actually one thing is, you have the Gemara in Bava Metzia presents a machlokes. How do you do a kinyan sudr anyway? When you're doing kinyan chalifin, who does the keli belong to? Does it belong to the koina, or does it belong to the makna? In the example, for example, we learn kinyan chalifin from the story of Boyaz and the Goyal in Rus over there. It says shalaf ish nalev nasa mara'ehu. So what is it? Is it that Boyaz gave the shoe to the Goyal, and in return the Goyal is transferring him his rights? So it's a trade, or is it the other way around? The Goyal is giving it to Boyaz and to seal the deal. Along with this shoe, I'm giving you my rights. So that'll affect our Mishnah how we're describing Kenyan Chalifin over here. So therefore that may result in a different Girsa in our Mishnah. Also, for that matter, when we say Nischayev Zeba Chalifov, in that connection, Tosfos brings up the point, Nischayev Zeba Chalifov may not mean only what Rashi is saying, that he's Chayev in the Oinsin, in the sense, in other words, let's say you're trading a cow for a donkey, like the example in our Mishnah. So what are we saying? As soon as Reuven does Meshicha on the cow, which previously belonged to Shimon, then right away now, Shimon owns the donkey, and if it dies, for example, then it's his problem. But it also means another point as well. Nischayev Zeba Chalifov also means that Shimon is now responsible to actually transfer the other animal to him. It means that Reuven now, rather, is not Nischayev Zeh. So that's what, if you take out the word Zeh, it means once Reuven has done Meshicha on the Parah, it also requires him now to make sure that the donkey gets to Shimon. Now, if it dies, fine, that's Shimon's problem, but as long as it's alive and healthy, he needs to make sure the deal is final, neither of them can back out of it, and therefore he needs to deliver the goods to Shimon. So the Gemara asks, Chalifin Mayninu. What do we mean by Chalifin in the Mishnah? The Pashtus, we mean Matbeah. It sounds we mean the coin. Again, when we say Kolan Nasa Domin Ba'acher, means something that is used as the standard of value against something else. Everything else can be converted into X amount of dollars or X amount of whatever currency. The question is, Shmamina Matbeah Nasa Chalifin. Can you learn from that coins can be used as a method of chalifin? Now, the Gemara discusses that point in Bava Metzia. You can use a kavi for chalifin, but can you use coins for that purpose? And the Gemara ends up saying that no. The reason being, because with coins, where does the value, it actually explains later in the Sogya over here from that Gemara in Bava Metzia. The reason is because coins, where do they get their value from? Ultimately, from whatever stamped on them. Now, the problem is, the same coin that has that stamp of the government on it, the government may later on decide that has to be withdrawn from, not just changed, but withdrawn from circulation. Meaning they can say, for example, you know, we have the previous emperor, we don't like him, you know, we staged a coup against him, we overthrew him, and now we don't want his coins, which are like miniature billboards of his, still in circulation. So those coins from that previous emperor are not legal tender anymore. And then what happens is then they're only worth the gold or the silver or whatever metal that's in them. So because of that, therefore, they're not like a keli, which has an intrinsic value, which is always going to remain no matter what.
Olden days, that's how they used to coin used to be the value of the silver.
Well, there is that. It's true the coin used to be the value of the silver, not always the full value, though, but more to the point, sometimes it didn't contain the full amount of silver or whatever metal. But the point is also people accepted it like this. You didn't have to go bring scales every time and weigh them. Why? Because you trust. It has the picture of Emperor Pliny on it, and therefore that's good enough for me. But if now that coin is not supposed to be used as legal tender anymore, and you'll get in trouble with the government for using it, because then it means, in effect, you still support that old emperor or whatever, then yeah.
Also, depending where we are, it would be good.
If people will readily accept it or not. Yeah, so that's the Gemara concludes over there, that because of that, you can't use coins for chalifin. Which now Tosfos does point out a couple of things over there. The fact is that according to the opinion that Matbea Nasa Chalifin, there are a couple of reasons to argue why it should. After all, you can use a coin, even if it was disqualified for use as a coin, you can use it for, besides you have the gold and silver in it, but also you can use it as a counterweight when you're weighing things on a scale. You need something of known weight on one side, so the coin will serve that purpose. You can even make a hole in it and use it as jewelry around your kid's neck or something. So there is some kind of use for it, but nevertheless, the Gemara concludes that it's not so, and ain't must be a nasa halifin. Whereas if you're going to learn our Mishnah, Kolam Nasa Jomim Ba'acher means coins, and it means coins could be used for Chalifin. So Amar Rav Yehuda Hoch Karma. So Rav Yehuda says the Mishnah is not talking about coins. And what it means is, Kolam Nishoim Jomim Ba'acher means anything where you have to evaluate the value of it when you're trading it for something else. Which means, in other words, any metalplin except for coins, because coins, you don't need to evaluate, is this coin worth a dollar? Yeah, it says on it a dollar, so it's worth a dollar. But any other thing that you want to trade, you have that example of that fellow with his paperclip and his pencil. In principle, you have to figure out, well, how much is the paperclip worth and how much is the pencil worth? A potter and a chamer, same thing. So everything, so all metalin except for coins. Other Rishonim say that the Ramban and others say that would include even karka for the same reason, because you also have to figure out the value of it against something else. Anyway, so you have an object of value that you're trading for something else. Then once one of them is zoicha in it, then he's chayev in the chalifin. And again, you have the various things that the various explanations of mischayev b'chalifin that we just talked about before. It means, in other words, that now once Reuven did meshicha on the cow, now the donkey belongs to Shimon, and if it dies, then it's Shimon's problem. But it also means that Reuven is now chayev to deliver the donkey to Shimon. So we're not talking about coins at all in the Mishnah. We're talking about other objects of value, metalin, or maybe even karka, which can be used for chalif. And the Gemara says dekanami. In fact, you can prove that right, from the words of the Mishnah. Because after all, the Mishnah continues with examples like that. So therefore, so if the Mishnah had been talking about coins, then the next example should be an example of coins. So therefore, obviously, the Mishnah is only talking about other things other than coins, and therefore it's giving examples of a potter and a chamer. So even though, now Rashi uses the point, Rashi makes the point, even though they're not a keli, a potter or a chamer is not a keli, nevertheless, it still works as metalin. The Gemara there in Bav Metzia discusses, besides that you can't use a makbeya as chalifin, the Gemara also discusses over there, you can't use peiris as chalifin. So that the Kenyan Chalifin doesn't work by using the Paris as the method of exchange. Now you can acquire Paris through Chalifin. You can make a Kenyan Sudder and have the other guy acquire Paris with it, but you can't, for example, let's say when you're doing the Chiras Chometz, you can't have that the Rav is going to give you an orange and in return you're giving him your Chometz. That won't work. Because Paris can't be used for Chalifin. Because that has to be a Kaylee. Tosfos has a long discussion of various parts of the sugya over here, and having a bunch of questions on Rashi and explaining many parts of the sugya differently. One thing Tosfos points out is that a shur or a chamur or a parah or whatever may well be considered a keli for this purpose, because you can actually use it for something. The shur you use for plowing. The parah you use also for pulling loads or whatever. Therefore, it can be considered a keli in that sense, as opposed to fruit. You don't really use for that purpose. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Olamai disolik adaitin veikrud matbei nasa chalifin." Now, let's go back to our original understanding and ask why we even thought it could mean that. We thought, to begin with, that the Mishnah's kol nasa javim ba'achar refers to a coin, and we asked on that only because of the opinion in Bav Metzia, which ends up being the halacha that ain't matbei nasa chalifin. But now the Gemara is saying, never mind that consideration. There's a different reason we can't say that the Mishnah couldn't have meant coins. My ketzad, you have to ask anyway, what does the ketzad mean? And now that we said dekanami, so that means, in other words, we could have thought the Mishnah is talking about coins. We can't, because ein matbeya nasa chalifin. And it's backed up by the words of the Mishnah. What were we thinking in the first place to even think that it was matbeya? How would, if we assume that in the first place, how would we understand the ketzad of the Mishnah, which is talking about a parah and a chamor and so forth? The answer is hachi kamar. You could have thought that the Mishnah, when it says ketzad, means it could have meant peiris nami abi chalifin. You can, in fact, use peiris also for chalifin. Ketzad, and how would you use peiris? Hechlef b'sar shur b'parah, or b'sar chamor b'shur. If you traded the meat of a shur for a parah, or the meat of a chamor, which you could use as dog food or whatever, for a chamor, etc., and that wouldn't be considered, so that would be considered peiris. Then you could say once one is zoicha, then he's chayiv and chalifin. So in other words, maybe conceivably we could have assumed to begin with, the Mishnah is telling us that matbeya and peiris could have been used for chalifin. So therefore, the Mishnah would have said kolam nasa domin ba'achar, meaning coins, and then it would have continued ketzad, and here is an example where you can use peiris for the same purpose. Right. But now, of course, we said that doesn't work anyway, because the fact is you can't use a makbeya and you can't use peiris. But the Gemara says that matter of peiris is not so simple. So we can understand the Mishnah well according to Rav Sheshes, who says that Peiros can be used as the means of Chalifin, in other words, in place of the Suder. The point, the question basically boils down to, again, where do we learn the concept of Chalifin from? It's from the story of Boaz and, from the story of Boaz and the Goyal. There they use a shoe, which is a keli. Peiros are not a keli. So therefore, according to Rav Nachman, Peiros are disqualified as Chalifin. Because they're not a keli. According to Rav Sheshes, doesn't agree with that. So Hanichal Rav Sheshes. So it works out well. According to Rav Sheshes, that I'm a Peiros Abi Chalifin. He says that Peiros can be used as Chalifin. So therefore, so it works. So when we first assumed that the Mishnah conceivably could be telling us Matbeis and Peiros, and then it's telling us, and then in the end we're saying not Matbeis, but maybe after all Peiros still would work, because Hechlet Shur Bepardo wouldn't mean the live Shur, it would mean a dead Shechted Shur, it would mean the meat of it. So that would work out, according to Rav Sheshes. El Rav Nachman, Rav Peiros, Lei Abi Chalifin, Ma'ikol Meimer. How are you going to explain the Mishnah like Rav Nachman, that where he says that Peiros cannot be used for Chalifin? So what would the Mishnah be? So why would we assume to begin with that the Mishnah is talking about coins, and then later on say, no, coins can't be used for Chalifin, but Peiros can. And the example is Hechlef Shur Bepardo. The fact is, according to Rav Nachman, that's not going to work. So the answer is, according to him, you would have to say Halchi Karmer. Yesh domim shehen kachalifin. We will go back to the possibility that we are talking in the Mishnah about Matbeya. We do have a way in which Matbeya can be used as chalifin. Not really as chalifin, though, but rather as a different type of kingdom. So we started with the assumption that coins might be able to be used as chalifin, meaning that, again, you know, when you buy the rub by Mechiras Chametz, he will give you a coin, and in return you'll give him your chametz. We said no, that doesn't work, because again, coins depend on their face value rather than on their intrinsic value. But we do have a way in which a kinyan can be of metalpin can be accomplished with kesef, but not where it's being done as chalifin, but rather a different way. If you're trading the value of a cow for a para, which he owed him previously. So in other words, what happened was, you have multiple transactions that took place over here. So to begin with, Reuven sold Shimon a shur, where the price was a money. So Shimon did Mashicha on the shur, now he owes him the money. Now he says, you know what, instead of paying me the money, do you have a cow instead? So how about then give me the cow instead, and that'll make up for the money. So you already owe me previously from a previous transaction, you owe me for that, and therefore now that will be koina without doing mashicha on that part. That will be the equivalent of chalifin. So it's not really chalifin. It's not really chalifin. You could almost think of it as like a delayed chalifin, because first he gave him the shur and he owed him money for it, but now he's giving him back a para in return. But we're saying that still works, even though they're not saying it's directly the shur for the para, but rather it's the value of the shur that you owe me from the previous transaction for the para. So therefore, so that works. Oid mei chamor b'shur. So that works without mashicha. That's how Rashi explains. There are Rishonim who explain the Ritva, explains that what we're talking about is that, for example, that he owes that somebody else owes him money. A shulchani, for example, a money changer owes him money, and you get maimat shloshta, and you get the three of them standing together, where there you can transfer the debt from one person to another. The Gemara talks about that in various places. If Reuven owes Shimon money, and now he wants to transfer the debt, that now Levi will be able to collect it instead of Shimon, then they maimat shloshta, and they have the three of them stand together, and he tells him in the presence of the other one, this money that you owed me, now give it to Pliny instead. So that would be the example over here. So now we're saying that money, so the money has been transferred by Maimon Shloshton, and it works to be Koina the Metalplin. So there you have an example where you can actually be Koina Metalplin with money without doing Mashiach. Right. So the Gemara says, my timer, now why would that work? Because the Tanner of our Mishnah holds like Rabbi Yechanan, we learned the other day, and the Gemara mainly talks about it in Bava Metzia, that Rabbi Yechanan holds, Minat Torah, the exchange of money creates a kingdom. because the Torah said, because the Torah says, by Hekdesh, it says, v'nosen ha-kesef, become loy, and we learn from that, that not only by Hekdesh, but also by a hedyet, you can pay money and you're coining the thing. Umma tam omru, meshicha koina, so why did the Chacham say that meshicha, instead of kesef acquires, because otherwise he may tell him your wheat was burned up in the attic, meaning in other words, you gave me the money. At this point, the wheat that's in my attic is yours, and a fire broke out, and I'm sorry I wasn't able to save it. He has no incentive to bother because he already got his money. Whereas on the other hand, if you say that it's still his until the Mashiach is accomplished, then that gives him an incentive to try to save it. In fact, Tosfos points out by in Bava Metzia over there, for that reason, when you have this case that we said before of using the value from the previous sale as the method of chalifin, there we don't require meshicha. What about nisuf uchitecha ba'aliyah? One point is it's a very uncommon situation, and therefore the chacham didn't have to bother making a takana for that. Another point is also because again you don't need all of the money to have changed hands. Once you have one zuz has changed hands, then already you have it. and he still wants to get the rest of his money, so that'll also give him an incentive to go and save it. you could say again, milsa de shchicha gozer barabanan. So only in a common case did the chacham make a gzera and say that mois won't work and then meshicha instead, or one of them, or some of the other methods of kinyan will work. Milsa de shchicha le gozer barabanan. But when it comes to an uncommon case like this, then maybe we'd say the chachamim are not gozer. According to Rashi's explanation that we're talking about over here, that he previously owed him money for a previous sale, then Rishonim bring up the question that in that case that would be a milva. The same way as we learned earlier in the Masechta, and we're going to learn in greater detail later on, that you can't do kiddushin with milva because milva loitzah nitna, the money was given to be spent, it's already been spent. So how would it work over here? So one answer is. That one answer is, in fact, that we're not talking about the milva itself. We're talking about hanas and the chilas milva. The hanah that I'm forgiving you that milva, that I'm not going to charge you that, is you can use the same way as we learned earlier in the Masechta. You can use that for kedushin. So the same way you can use it for a sale, according to the Ritva, that we're talking about maimed shloshnan, then that whole issue is not relevant anyhow because you're not being moichel any choiv or anything. You're transferring the choiv from one person to another. So the Tana of our Mishnah agrees with Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore, so he's saying, kol ha-nasa gamin ba'achar. So we could, after all, understand the Mishnah is talking about money. You have a case where money can be used for kinyan and metalplin, keitzad, and namely that case is hechlef shor b'parah, etc. So therefore, hechlef shor b'parah, where the money was owed, whether from a previous sale like Rashi, or whether it was owed by a third party and then this transfer came from by Maimed Shloshtan, like the Ritva, and then it can be used as the method to accomplish the Kinyan even without Mashiach. But the Gemara asks whether Rish Lakish Dama Mashiachim before Rashi in the Torah. What about Rish Lakish's understanding? He says that Mashiach is clearly stated in the Torah. It's not a matter of a Takana Dirabanan. So according to him, the Kesef can't accomplish a Kinyan at all, even Daraisa. So you could say, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you can say, Midah Raisa Kesef would always work, Midah Rabbanan generally doesn't work, but in this kind of rare case, the Chachamim still allow it. But according to Rish Lakish, that it never begins in the first place. And then according to him, how are you going to understand the Mishnah? Hanicha isovala k'Rav Sheshes dama Peiras Abi Chalifin. You can understand if he says, like Rav Sheshes, that Peiras can be used for Chalifin, Mitaritz k'Rav Sheshes. Then he's going to explain the Mishnah, like we said before, you could explain it according to Rav Sheshes, that where the Mishnah had started by saying that the Mishnah had, we assumed to begin with the Mishnah was talking about Mois. We said it can't, because you can't use money as Chalifin. But the Mishnah is telling us you could use Peiras, namely the B'sar Shur, which stands in place of Peiras, and that works. So you can use that for Chalifin. Ella Yisavu like Rav Nachman, Dama Peiras like Abi Chalifin. But if you tell us he holds like Rav Nachman, that Peiras can't be used for Chalifin either. Umachbeah like Koni, and Umachbeah can't be used either. So then what are we talking about? Mamai Mukila, how is he going to explain the Mishnah? What exactly does the Mishnah mean? What does the Mishnah mean by the words Kalam Nasa Jamin Ba'achar? So the Gemara answers, Al Kocha, Rav Sheshes Svir Alei. Okay, of necessity, you're going to have to say that Rav Shlokish is going to have to hold like Rav Sheshes' understanding that you could use Peiris for, that that you could use Peiris for Chalifin. So, so it comes out, so it comes out, you have altogether a few different ways of explaining the Mishnah. You can explain that Kol HaNasa Domin Ba'acha does mean Matveya, and it can be used for Chalifin and Peiris also. For example, Basar Shur, but we said that no, because you can't use Matveya for Chalifin. And according to Reb Nachman, you can't use Peiris for Chalifin either. The second explanation was Kol HaNasa Domin Ba'acha meant Kol HaNishon Domin Ba'acha, means anything that has to be evaluated to see whether it's worth trading for something else. So we're talking about Metalpilin. And the third explanation was that we are talking about matveya, but we're talking about it can be used for chalifin when it's coming as payment of a debt or maimed shloshdon or whatever it is. So that would work according to Reb Nachman's and Reb Yochanan's opinions. So again, Tosfos has a long discussion about many, many details of the ins and outs of the sugya, and has a different explanation. First of all, Rashi at the end, Rashi brings a different, he says, yesh mishanin, some people explain our sugya differently. That Reb Nachman and Reb Sheshes are specifically arguing about Peiris, not about other kinds of metalpilin. So maybe, in other words, they would agree that other metalpilin, including even meat, maybe could be used as chalifin. But Rashi says that no. The fact is, it has nothing to do with Peiris versus other metalpilin. The reason is Reb Nachman is saying you can't use Peiris because not similar to Nahal. And Reb Sheshes is learning from a different word in the same pasuk, Kayim Kol Dover. So therefore, it has to be that the explanation, it has to be that the Machlokas is based on the question: is this similar to a Nahal or not? On the other hand, Tosfos finds a way to justify this explanation that Rashi doesn't like, that they could be arguing. So again, Tosfos makes the point, it's one thing that a shur can be considered like a keli. In Rashi's explanation, it comes out that we have to say a shur is not considered a keli, therefore, according to Rav Sheshes, you couldn't use a shur for chalifin. There's a meat. No, sorry, I said it wrong. Exactly. The meat would be for the meat for sure, not because like payers. But right, even the shur, the living shur, Rashi is learning you can't use it as chalifin because it's not a keli. At least according to Reb Nachman, that you need a keli. A shur is not a keli. Here's where Tosfos comes in and says, no, a shur is absolutely a keli because you can use it. So therefore, that makes the meaning of the sugya somewhat different. That they're not arguing about using a live shur as a. So according to Rashi's explanation, we're forced to say, according to Reb Nachman, that Mishnah is talking about matveya, and it's giving the example where you're using the money from the previous sale of the shur. I a matveya nasa chalifin. But in this case, it does. In this case, the Mishnah is telling us it does work because you're not using the matveya itself as the thing for chalifin, but rather you're using it as you previously owe me this money, and in return I'm going to buy this thing from you instead. But according to Tosfos, that is not necessary. We can say they are in fact arguing whether you can use. They might both agree that the shur itself could be used for chalifin because the shur would be considered a keli, and they both agree that a keli can be used for chalifin. Mishnah says, let's see if we can get through this. Mishnah says, damning day, 30 of time. Yeah. Mishnah says, Rishus ha-gavoya b'kesef. Something goes into the rishus of the gavoya of Hashem, meaning of Hekdesh, through kesef, unlike with a hedyot, where you need meshicha or one of the other methods of kinyan that we talked about before. With hekdesh, the exchange of money makes the kinyan. The Yerushalmi says on this lashema aretzim loya, meaning that it's in effect it's kinyan chotzer. Any place where the thing is in the world, then Hashem acquires it through kinyan chotzer. Or the shus a hedyot b'chazaka. On the other hand, a hedyot acquires something through chazaka, like we learned before. Another difference between Kekdish and anything else, Amirosi Lagavaya Kinsirosi Lahedya. Saying that you're going to give something to Hekdish is the equivalent of actually doing the Sira and being Machne to the Hedya, so therefore it's considered to belong to Hekdish, and you have to go and follow through with it and give it to Hekdish, or be Poydeh, as the case may be. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Ketzav Rishus HaGavoya B'Kesef. What does this mean? That something is acquired by Hekdesh with Kesef. Means, Gizva Shenosen Mois B'Behema. Suppose that the treasurer of the Beis Mikdash gave money to pay for a behema, for Korbanos, after the behema b'sofa olam, even if the behema is at the other end of the world, Kona, then he's Koneh for the Beis Mikdash and the other guy has to deliver it. Or behedyet, like Konav Shiyim Shrech. On the other hand, if a behedyet did the same kind of thing, it would only work once he does Mashiach. Kate said, Amirosa le Gavaya kim Sirosa le Hedyet. What is this other part of the mission about Amirosa le Gavaya mean? Ha Oimer shows the Ola Bais the Hekdish. Person says this Shur should be an Ola, or this house should be Hekdish. Afilab a Sofa Olam, even if that Shur house is at the other end of the world, Kona, then Hekdish is Kona. The Hedyet, like Kona, Adshi Yim Shrech the Yaksik. When it comes to a Hedyet, only when he does Mashicha on the Para, or he does Hazaka on the house. More dinim in that connection. Moshchei b'mana. What happens if he's buying it back from Hekdesh? He did the meshicha on the object, planning to pay a mana. The gizbar told him this thing is worth a mana. But like hispik lifdosad, so amad b'masayim, before he had the chance to actually give the money, it went up in value, and now it's worth 200. Noisin masayim, then he has to pay 200. My time of nosin akesef become loy, because the pasuk says that he gives the money and it becomes his. So only when he gives the money does it become his, not when he does Mashiach. The actual words in the pasuk are not v'nosin akesef become loy. Tosfos elsewhere mentions that the Gemara is kind of paraphrasing what it actually says in the pasuk, but it quotes it all over Shas this way. Another go the other way around. Moshe b'masayim v'lehispik v'doisei ad sh'omad b'mona. The other way around, when he did the gizbar told him this thing was worth 200, so he's ready to pay 200 and he does meshicha, and before he has the chance to pay the money, it goes down and it's worth only a mona. Noisin masayim, he still has to pay 200. My time, alo yehei koya hedyet, choma mehekdish. We shouldn't make the power of a hedyet stronger than a hekdish. If that had happened by a hedyet, he would still have to pay because he was already koneh at the meshicha and he owes the money. We're not going to say that hekdish is going to be any less than a hedyet, therefore he owes hekdish the full value.
Hekdish always gains.
Hekdish always gains, right? More genuine about that the other way around. Pedoi b'masayim, what about the other way around? He gave the money, he gave the 200, before he had a chance to do meshicha, then went down and is now worth only a mana. Noisin masayim, he still has to give the 200. In other words, he doesn't get any of his money back. My time of nosna kesef for kamloi, because again, the din by hekdesh is that karka makes the kin. Pedoi b'mona, on the other hand, here we have where hekdesh is not gained. Pedoi b'mona, if he actually paid a mana, v'lehispik l'moshchei ad sh'omad b'masayim, before he had the chance to do meshicha, it went up and is now worth 200. In this case, we don't say he has to pay the hekdesh, the extra amount. Masha poda podui, what he redeemed is considered redeemed. Ve'ena nosin el mana, all he has to pay is the mana. We do not make him pay the extra money. My time. So we want to ask, am I? Now, why should that be? Otu hediyot, why don't we say that the hediyot shouldn't be stronger than hekdesh? If he were to do the meshicha from the hediyot, he would have to pay at this point the whole 200. Why over here are we saying that he gets to pay only the 100? And the answer is, otu hediyot lab mishaparakoi, because in this case, in a parallel case with a hediyot, if he had paid the money and not yet done the meshicha, if the other guy could back out of the deal and say, I'm not going to sell it to you unless you pay me the extra 100, however, he would have to accept a curse of Misha Porah and Beistin. Beistin would tell him, Misha Porah, Hashem will pay back the Anshe Dera Mabul and Anshe Dera Floga and so on and so forth. We'll pay back, we'll punish somebody, She'ena Umid B'diburay, somebody who doesn't keep his word. So then the sale can be voided, but we still require that. When it comes to hekdesh, though, we're not going to impose such a thing on hekdesh. So in other words, it means we're not going to allow hekdesh to retract over there, because we're not going to make a mishapara on hekdesh or on the gizbar of hekdesh. So therefore, we're going to end up with, therefore, there's no possibility of mishapara. There's no possibility of retracting. Therefore, hekdesh can't say, sorry, I'm not selling it to you unless you pay 200. He already paid the 100. V'nosin akesef for kamloi, and we're not going to make him do any, and we're not going to make him do anything. Even though he hadn't done the mishicha yet, nevertheless, he doesn't have to pay the rest. He doesn't have to pay the extra, because otherwise with a hediyot it would have had to be Misha Parah, and by hekdesh we're not going to be doing that.
Even though there was no Meshicha,
exactly, because since by hekdesh, kesef is enough to be koina, and by a hediyot, it would be enough to trigger Mishapara, then therefore over here it makes it that there's no Mishapara and there's no nothing, and therefore he gets away with paying only the 100.
Right.
Okay, everyone.